Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. I vividly recall the Vietnam War. It was all the news you ever saw on TV, just videos of helicopters picking up dying boys while long grass blew in their propeller wash, and it led the news on all three channels. All we had was three channels, by the way. Boys from my generation were being drafted to fight in a war that made no sense to anybody. It never did. And so soon, of course, we had great big war protests. I graduated from college in 1968, which was the year when all the colleges closed early and many of them didn't even hold graduations. We picked up our diplomas from long tables outside the administration buildings because we were basically at war. We were at war inside the United States even more than we were at war outside it. And a lot of literature came out of the Vietnam War. I've read some of it, but even some of the memoirs seem to me distancing. In the same way, you know, go to a war movie, that feels distancing. It's dramatic, but the frame is too big. The violence is dramatic, but you can't get inside the people somehow. You aren't living it. By contrast, our guest today has written an extraordinary book about the Vietnam War and how it has affected the whole rest of his life. It's a very personal memoir, so the war and the protests and all the rest that I remember so well are just a backdrop for his own inner workings, which are powerful. And that's what makes all of it real, including the war itself. There are very, very few writers who have the gift of putting you inside the action, inside the people who are living the action. But that's something our guest today can do. So let's live it for a minute. There you are. You're a carefree kid, and all the world is your oyster. You're having fun, and you and your friend one day decide you're going to join the service and go fight in Vietnam. Not because you have a conviction about the war, not really because you're bored, but more because you are so very young, and it seems to be a great idea that day. So when recruiters for the more exotic branches of the service tell you there will be a process and a bit of a wait, well, you're young. You don't want to wait. So you ask the Army recruiter how soon he can take you so you can go and be in the infantry in Vietnam. And the recruiter says, how soon can you pack? So off you go. And you're one of perhaps, I don't know, three or four boys in the entire United States who actually enlist to go to Vietnam deliberately. And your name is Bill Vandenbush. Welcome, Bill. I am thrilled to have you with us.
Thank you, Roberta. It's a joy to be here.
I should just say that part of Bill's story involves some really appalling injuries that occurred in the Vietnam War, and we're going to talk about those just briefly. And one of them, of course, was to his throat. So if you turn up your volume a little bit, this is going to be really worth hearing. Bill, please talk about that decision, which I thought was hysterical. You and your friend just decide you're going to enlist, and you don't understand why everybody else thinks that's amazing. What prompted that? Do you recall that day?
I do recall that day. Actually, what happened was we had been out protesting the war. So I kind of thought, well, I don't know anything about this war. Everything I knew about war I learned from television about, you know, from John Wayne movies and such. And I thought, I don't even know where Vietnam is. So I thought the only way to go find out about this was to join the Army. So my buddy Dennis and I went and joined the Army. That wasn't our first choice, but that's where we ended up. And we went through military training. And I went to Vietnam, but he didn't. At least not immediately.
So you this started out on the buddy plan, but quickly you were separated and you went right to Vietnam. It's a very vivid description of what it was like to be there. And my own husband fought in Vietnam. Actually, he was a doctor. He didn't fight at all, but he liked a good story he can tell now. But it was very familiar to me. So he was a pathologist, though, so you didn't have to encounter him. Fortunately for you, you didn't ever encounter anyone like my husband. But the way you described Vietnam was the same way he described it. It was hot and it was smelly and it was sweaty and it was humid, and it doesn't sound like a place you'd really want to go.
No. I wanted to, in the book, I wanted to write a book that didn't just talk about the things that happened in Vietnam, but I wanted to talk about things that happened and how I thought and felt about them. I wanted to express the war from inside of me, from my heart and my mind, rather than just from my vision of watching things happen. And I think that that comes from, of course, I have a history of working in the mental health field, and we talk a lot about thoughts and feelings, and we try to personalize it. So I try to personalize this experience.
Part of writing is choosing what you're going to write about. And there are some scenes early in the book which were just wrenching, where the Vietnamese brought a woman to you who was dying, but you couldn't do anything because she might have been booby-trapped or something. And friendly fire, which was something I didn't realize was an issue. You were eventually a victim of it. These are things we don't think about, these details of war. I think that's part of what makes your book so gripping. In the early part, you pick out things that really, really tug at people. And that's beautiful. So, and you talk about how you felt during that time. You had to toughen yourself and just say, no, we're not going to help this person. No, we're not going to try to bury this woman. No, we're not going to do anything for these people that were theoretically there to try to help. That felt awful.
That's correct. Yeah, everything about that war went against who I was. I was a kind and compassionate person, and being a soldier in war, you can't always be kind and compassionate. I was when I could be, but there were many times when I had to let go of my compassion and do what I needed to do to stay alive and to function on the battlefield so that our own men didn't die.
It was very clear, too, how important the other people became to you, not just you didn't just become affectionate with them, but in some cases they became more of an enemy almost than the people you were fighting. You couldn't trust an officer. You were trying to protect each other from stupid decisions made above you. All of that comes through so vividly in the book and makes you sit on the edge of your chair as you're reading it. Bill, when you got to Vietnam, you were a kid. This was serious stuff, and it was clear you were over your head. But then you became a hardened soldier. Tell us how that felt, going from being this 18-year-old kid. Within 6 months, weren't you commanding other troops and stuff? How did you do that?
I was about 4 months into my tour. I was a squad leader and was also involved in some other patrols and smaller recon patrols. And we were in the field a lot because we were part of a reactionary force. So anytime there was action, we had to be there. We had to go in and try to bail the other troops out. So I saw a lot of combat. In the time that I was there, I probably saw twice as much combat as the average Vietnam soldier. And this was frightening. And Vietnam was a very frightening place because you never knew when or where you were going to get hit. There were no front lines. There were no places to hide or be away from the war. You were in the war 24/7. And it was scary for an 18-year-old kid who grew up in Los Angeles, California. It was very, very scary.
But you hardened. I don't know any other word to put it. Way to put it. You seem to have, because you survived and you sort of learned really fast how to stay alive, and you watched other people not learn fast enough. That watching you mature so quickly was fascinating to me, and it was a little chilling in a way that that could happen to you, but you had to do it to survive.
Yeah, I went from being an innocent kid, a very kind and compassionate person, to being a hardened soldier, able to take lives and to shoot back and to fight and to direct my men to fight the war. It was a self-defense kind of thing, I think, because you had to get hardened so that you wouldn't be emotionally affected when you went into a battle. If you were weak, if you were emotionally weak, you might fall apart in a situation like that. So I became a very hardened soldier. I became, I had to let all my emotions go and focus on the war, focus on staying alive and fighting the enemy. And there was no room for anything else.
And you actually let yourself go. I mean, there were these things I'm probably remembering out of order, but when you lost the last little bits of your own personal possessions, that was bad. But then it sort of let you let go of the bill you had been, and all that existed was the minute you were in, the fighting and the needing to protect your men. That was so moving to read about that.
Yeah, it's like growing up really fast, growing up 20 years at a time.
So, yes.
I went from being 18 to being 40 in no time at all. You know, it was the kind of rapid growth, emotional growth, that you probably can't get anywhere else but in war. And I certainly wouldn't tell people to go to war to get that experience.
You did it the hard way. Yes, it was quick, but it was tough. Now, one thing I don't get is, how did you remember it so much? Because you have such vivid details that clearly you aren't making up. You're remembering these details and names and events. How did you recall so much?
Well, I talked to some of the folks that I served with. And I also got all my military records, so that I would have records of where I was, and then I researched different battles that were in those different areas and combined those with my memories. And the more I worked on it, the more memories I had. In other words, I would write about an incident, and then in 2 or 3 days after I wrote it, I would start to remember, oh yeah, that happened and that happened.
Yeah. Oh,
I would go back and rewrite. So it wasn't like I just sat down one day and wrote all these memories out.
No.
They came very slowly, and it took some work to remember the details. But, you know, we store all those memories. They're all there. It's just a matter of pulling them out and bringing them back to the surface, which was also very difficult. I mean, I had to kind of relive the experience in order to write about them.
There's one that I just want to mention that really, really was kind of horrifying. You got a new commander, and he I guess nobody really liked him anyway. And he told you had to go back and bury a woman, and it was a Vietnamese woman who had been killed, and you did. And then somebody called in an airstrike against you, so your own side was bombing you and your companions while you're trying to do what your commander told you to do. And he never bothered to tell them, those are our guys burying that woman. I mean, that's horrible.
Kind of, and we knew as soldiers who'd been there for a while and experienced that we don't bury the enemy soldiers and we don't bury the indigenous people that were killed. We leave that to their own folks. And we found a woman that was dead. We came back and reported to our commander, who was kind of a new guy. And he said, well, you go back and bury her. And we tried to tell him that that just wasn't right. And so we went back out there. And then they called an airstrike in on that area while we were out there. And one of my very, very close friends was killed by this airstrike in a horrifying way.
We're coming to a break, Bill. I just want to give the punchline. The punchline is he was so prepared to go and kill this commander, our friend Bill was, that his friends had to tie him up for how long? Until you sobered up enough and you didn't go kill the commander?
It was probably 8 or 9 hours that they kept me tied up.
Oh, my Lord. So, Bill, talk about how you were wounded, which was really appalling to read, I must say.
Well, it was a very difficult day. I was asked by our company commander to lead my squad in a rescue attempt on a helicopter that had been shot down. So we took about 3 squads, and the rest of the company moved back to the base camp. We'd been out in the field for probably several weeks at that time. And my 2 best buddies had gone on R&R that day, so they weren't with me. And normally we would be together, kind of cover each other. And as soon as we arrived in the area where the helicopter had been shot down, we took heavy fire. So I directed my men to go down near the base of the hill and to spread out and take some cover. So I stayed back a little bit so that I could direct their fire and make sure that they were being effective in their fire, so that we could drive the enemy back and get to the downed helicopter. Well, we got pinned down, and the other squads got pinned down, and unbeknownst to me, the company commander called it an airstrike. Oh. And I saw the planes come over. I saw them drop their bombs at the top of the hill, and I thought to myself, if they drop those bombs just a little bit too soon, they're going to come right down on our position. We're very close. And I saw the planes circle around and make another pass. And when they dropped their bombs, it was way too early. And they dropped right on top of my position. The explosion from the bomb hit me in the side of my body, and a big piece of shrapnel hit me right in the face, crushed my face, tore my eye out. And I was lying there on the ground bleeding. And at that moment, the only thing I could think was, here I am, I'm 19 years old, I just turned 19. I'm many thousands of miles from home. No mom to kiss it and make it better.
No.
And I'm going to die right here.
Oh.
This is the end of my life.
Oh, wow.
And I suddenly just felt calm all over once I accepted that I was going to die. And I took my pack off and I got comfortable. And the next thing I know, I'm in this dark corridor and I'm moving forward. And then I came out into this bright white light. And the light was just absolutely beautiful. It was full of unconditional love and knowledge. I just felt so wonderful being there. long. It was all of my cares, all of my troubles, my injuries were just meaningless. Everything about this place was just wonderful. And my grandfather came walking towards me. He wasn't walking, actually. It was like a ball of light energy. And I knew it was my grandfather immediately, even though he didn't have a recognizable body. And he communicated with me telepathically. And he told me that everything was going to be all right, that I should just come in, and he was going to take me into this white light and show me around. And we started to move forward, and another being of light approached us and said, "No, you can't come in. You have to go back." And told me that I had a higher purpose to fulfill, and that I would go back, and no matter what happened on that day, I would live a long and productive life, and that everything was going to be all right. And I believed him. I mean, it was, this place was just magnificent. It was, again, that sense of being loved unconditionally was just an amazing feeling. And the sense of having knowledge of the universe, and the sense that there was so little responsibility as far as, you know, we worry about things here on Earth, about paying our bills and being responsible for family and job and all that. But there, none of that existed. None of that concern that we had. So after being told that I was going to have to return to the battlefield, I turned and I moved back into the dark corridor. And I was moving back through the corridor, and I woke up back on the battlefield. And I could hear the guns and the bombs going off. And although I was still very badly injured, I felt no pain. I was surrounded by the white light. I still felt that sense of peace and calm that I felt in the light. And I yelled at my men and said, "Stay down, I'm going to go get help." And as I started to get up, one of my men came crawling over to me, and he'd been shot in the chest, and I took his back off, and he had a big hole in his back. And I knew that he was going to die, that he was going to go where I had just come from. So I comforted him, and I held him in my arms. And as I looked him in the eyes, he died, and his spirit rose up from his body. And I just assured him that everything was going to be okay. And then his spirit left him.
I'd like to say parenthetically that what you saw, that mist you saw rising, some people do see rising, and you're obviously, your vibration was higher because of where you had just been. So you saw that, which was an amazing and beautiful thing. Talk for a minute or so about what it was like to be in that condition, and they're putting you aside to die, and you're fine. How did that feel?
Yeah, well, you know, being in that white light, as they told me that no matter what happens, I would be okay. And that while trying to get up and go get help, I got shot 5 times to the arm, chest, and neck, and of course lost my ability to speak. But during that time that I was getting help, the medics came to me and took me to a hospital. I felt this calm, this total calm, total peace. There was no worry, no concern, even though I probably should have died several times over. Everything was wonderful. I was surrounded by the white light. I was just relaxing. The doctors didn't believe that I would live. There were numerous casualties that day, and they really didn't have time to wor- work on me if they were going to save the others, because my wounds were extensive, and they didn't think I could live from these wounds, that I would just die eventually. And yet, when they were finished working on everybody else, I was still there. I was still alive. And they finally did work on me and sent me to, eventually to a hospital ship, where they did some more surgery. And just throughout this recovery, it took me years to be able to function again. And it took me almost 10 years to learn to speak again. And throughout this time, this spirit that I encountered in the white light was with me, guiding me, helping me to find that path of healing, personal healing, and to find a path of not only healing myself, but a way to share some of that with other people.
Now, how were you communicating? Bill, how were you communicating with spirit? Was it words, or did you get feelings from spirit?
It was more like other people would talk to me sometimes, and they would say things like, "Oh, you should do this or that," but then I would hear the same things over and over. So I would know that that was spirit talking to me, or I would just get a feeling about something. You know, I was about to enter into something, like when I was going to college. People wanted me to run for public office. And I thought, no. But Spirit said, do this, even though you can't talk. You should do this. And it kind of guided me to do this. And throughout my life, when I paid attention to it, the Spirit has guided me to do wonderful things. But I haven't paid attention to it. Life became very difficult. And it's this guidance just comes in a wide variety of communications. It's sometimes I can see pictures. Sometimes I can actually see what's going to happen in the future. It's like a picture that comes to me. And it says, you know, this is what things will be. So I try to follow that path of what will be, because I know that that will come much easier to me than if I try to avoid following that path. And the Spirit has just stuck with me throughout my life to give me a chance at being things I never thought I could be, and experiencing things I never thought I could experience. I've been very fortunate in this life to have a very broad base of experiences that most people would never have, and that came from following the Spirit.
I think it's important to say that, yes, Bill has had an unusual life, and he had that near-death experience, but this guidance from Spirit is available to everyone. Everyone has a spirit guide. Most of us have many. And simply doing what Bill has done and allowing Spirit to communicate to us through other people or just with hunches and following not our own little wishes, but what Spirit seems to be suggesting, opens you to Spirit. As isn't that true, Bill? The more you follow Spirit's, what Spirit directs us you to do, the more fun things happen. That's been my experience in life. It makes your life better and better.
And the more you're aware of these Spirit communications, the easier it is. So as you develop this awareness, you begin following it, you begin to trust.
Yes.
Enough to step out. I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, stepping off the edge of a building or something. But when you've learned to trust that communication from Spirit, you take the chance, you take the risk. I mean, don't be stepping off any buildings, but
no.
You know, it's I'm just talking about that kind of risk that you're going to take.
Yes.
To go where you need to go, do what you need to do.
Yeah, I've lived both ways, and I have to say, I wouldn't do anything unless it felt that it was being guided by spirit. And that feels so much better than back when I used to wing it and follow my own whims. So you're teaching absolute wisdom. This is probably the most profound thing anyone has said on this program for quite a while. If we trust in spirit, we will live the fullest possible lives, even if we have foolish notions about going to Vietnam, which I don't think spirit, well, maybe spirit did guide you. I don't know, because you had all these experiences. You know, Jesus tells us in the Gospels that what we on earth may think is important and have been a prominent life is not a prominent lifetime to God. And in fact, not with the eyes of man does God see. You've heard that that's the case. Well, I think Bill is a great example of that. You know, his life, it seems to be exactly what we're all here to do. He has done some tough things, maybe made some mistakes, learned from them, turned to spirit for guidance. And now he's living a life of service to other people. That is the kind of thing we're all meant to do. Get money you don't get to take with you. The only thing you get to take with you is spiritual growth. And I love having the opportunity to share with you someone like Bill Vandenbosch, who's living that in a way that's exemplary. There's a whole other near-death experience that he had, which is so dramatic that I'm going to see if we can't have him back just to talk mainly about that one. Because I guess once you've done it once, you can do it again and it becomes really fancy. But we just don't have time today. I'd rather have Bill tell you something of perhaps what he would like to share with you as we wrap up this program. What are your thoughts, Bill?
Well, you know, I always had this connection to spirit after that near-death experience. And throughout the next 20 years after that experience, I consulted with that experience, and I consulted with that spirit, and I tried to find my path. And it wasn't easy. I mean, everything didn't go smoothly. I think sometimes people think that when you're connected with the spirit and you've had these experiences, that everything in life just goes smooth, but it doesn't. In fact, life got bad sometimes. I got divorced from my wife. I ended up homeless. Things just didn't go right, but I think they didn't go right because I wasn't following the path that Spirit laid out. After about 20 years, I was back in school, and I started talking about this experience, this near-death experience. And the next thing you know, I'm on TV and radio, and people are writing newspaper articles about me, and I'm talking about this experience, and everything is just going much better. Life is moving forward in a way that was very productive and allowed me to share this with other people. I talked to people in hospitals that were dying. I was able to talk to people who didn't absolutely believe that there was a God or a spirit. I was able to share these experiences with people. And the more I shared, the more I grew. I became stronger by sharing my experiences. And as I went through life, sharing these experiences and talking about it, the more I was surrounded by the white light, and the more this path of spirituality made itself aware to me. It made me aware of that path. And it took me to a place where I was able to retire from my job, to write a book, to spend time talking to people, to go on television and radio again. It's been 30 years that I've been talking to people about this experience. And I've gotten so many positive responses comments from people that have been able to read my book or hear me speak and take what I've been telling them and put it to use in their own lives. This experience, this near-death experience, this spiritual out-of-body connection is so powerful. It can take you anywhere you want to go. When I was a kid, I couldn't even imagine going to college. I didn't do well in high school. But the spirit took me, and it took me back to school. It took me to college. It took me beyond that to a master's degree. It took me to a place where I felt I could then help other people by making myself better first and then taking that to the people that needed it. I've always been a compassionate person, and I still am. I care about people, and I care about sharing this knowledge that I have with other people. I love to hear from folks that want to talk about this. I can be reached at by email at hawkeyebilly65@gmail.com, or you can catch me on Facebook, Bill Vandenbush on Facebook, and I'm happy to talk to folks, email with people, and anytime anybody wants to discuss this, I'm certainly open to discussing this experience or any other kind of out-of-body experience.
I think people as well who may have been in war and may be traumatized by it would get a lot from a conversation with Bill. If anyone didn't have, you know, if you're driving or something and you didn't write down what he said, just go to robertagrimes.com and email me through the contact block there, and I'll get you his information so you can get in touch with Bill if you'd like to. Now, are you still doing your radio show?
I do a radio show. I co-host a radio show called Strange Harbor, in which we talk about all things paranormal. We've had several guests who talked about near-death experience, and I've talked about mine there, too. And we talk about Bigfoot and UFOs and conspiracy theories and just anything paranormal.
So how would they get to that? If people wanted to hear that, how would they get to hear that?
Oh, I can look it up at strangeharbor.net online. And all of our podcasts are on there. So
it's okay, strangeharbor.net. Again, if you need the information, just send me a contact through robertagrimes.com. Bill, it has been such a delight to have you with us. We're going to have you back to talk about deep near-death experiences, because the second one is even much more gigantic than the first. But it's been wonderful having you here. Thank you so much, and consider yourself hugged.
Thank you, Roberta. I really appreciate it.
My dear friends, please again remember that you are powerful and eternal. You never began and you never will end. And when you really get that, take it from me, it changes everything in your life for the better. Nothing is the same. Next week, our guest is going to be again my dear friend, Kelly Glover. We're going to be talking about our amazing voyage since she was last with us only in December. We'll share information about our new book, which we've written together. It's called The Fun of Living Together, and it's a fresh examination of why America continues to have such tremendous racial problems 150 years past the Civil War. I think this book will open your eyes. Certainly writing it opened my eyes. There's a simple and obvious cause of most of America's problems, not only our racial problems. And once you get what that problem is, what the root cause is, you'll see we can probably heal it in one generation. Next week, Kelly and I will share our first insights about this book, and after a very intense 2 months of work. So please join us. This week, our guest has been Bill Vandenbush. He had a near-death experience in Vietnam a long time ago, before anyone ever had a near-death experience. And his book, If Morning Never Comes, isn't just another book about near-death experiences. I think it's the most powerful book about the Vietnam War that I've ever read. If you live through that time, you're going to this book will take you back in ways that are not painful, but are really sort of elevating and freeing. If you didn't live through the Vietnam War, then If Morning Never Comes is going to give you a personal sense of a time when all the world was young, everything seemed to be bright and possible. Except that, of course, half a world away, our own high school classmates were being killed for nothing. I loved Bill Vandenbush's book. I think you're going to love it, too. Again, it's called If Morning Never Comes. You can get it on Amazon and perhaps in bookstores as well. The publisher is White Crow Books. Of course, my own nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and now The Fun of Living Together. They're available from bookstores on Amazon and as audiobooks. And they're also available in 33 languages on Amazon platforms worldwide. Actually, not the last two, but the others are. If you want to talk about any of my books, you can contact me through robertagrimes.com, and I'll be thrilled to hear from you. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Green Vision 7 Radio and on the X Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. Seek Reality also is available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. So you can find us just about anywhere you look. And if you can't find us, just go to robertagrimes.com and click on the radio button and you'll find out where I am now. If you want to contact me about anything, please don't hesitate to do that. I can no longer say if you don't hear within 24 hours, send flowers, because usually it can take up to 2 days, but I do answer every email and I'm thrilled to do it. I get wonderful questions and it's a gift every time I hear from someone. Meanwhile, as you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.